right into it. And in case you haven't realized already, I mentioned it leading up to the show this morning. Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation and Errors of New Mexico and Tipping Point New Mexico in for the full hour today. And a laundry list, Paul, of things, issues impacting our community we're going to touch on today. We want to spend a fair amount of time on this first story. Another time New Mexico finds itself at the bottom of a list. It's a list that comes out every year, but there's some surprise, you know, it's a little surprising how some people reacted to this.
Yeah, well, the report is known as Kids Counts. It is created by a what I would call center-left organization called the Annie E. Casey Foundation. And that's significant partially because, the state is a blue state. It is easy for us at a more conservative organization like Rio Grande Foundation, nonpartisan.
Arguably the bluest state.
You can argue that, yeah. for us at the Rio Grande Foundation, we're more center right leaning. It's easy for us to say, New Mexico's not getting the job done. We're not well governed, et cetera, et cetera. Well, when a report comes out from a more liberal minded organization, it should theoretically generate a little more interest and concern, especially since that report has found New Mexico to be dead last in the quality of life for New Mexico's children. They look at four major policy areas: economic well-being. They look at the quality of family structure, the education system, and health outcomes for those children. And unfortunately, New Mexico doesn't perform well in any of them. Worse is that we're actually seeing a drop in these outcomes. Now, the left, which is much more politically motivated here than actually doing what's best for New Mexico's children, and that's the sad thing, is that they're trying to defend and explain away this particular report, which, quite honestly, is not worth the time. The reality is that this is a crisis. It's been a crisis for a long time. Our policymakers haven't done anything. Obviously, we believe that the voters and the electorate of New Mexico needs to act and act quickly. So I'll go through a few of the data points and then more broadly some of the kind of fallout I'd like to discuss. So I mentioned four categories. We looked at, there's four subcategories. So economic well-being, just as an example, includes children in poverty, children whose parents lack secure employment, children living in households with a high housing cost burden, and teens not in school and not working. Now, you can argue with these, but I actually think that the Annie E. Casey Foundation does a really good job. There's some quibbles of some of them, but you can go through it yourself. I encourage you to go to errorsofenchantment.com, where we've got two now posts dealing with this particular report. So of the variables that changed from last year to this year, so 2024 to 2025, seven got worse, four got better. That is not an indicator that things are going in a good direction in New Mexico.
So I was
going
to ask, so the four that got better is probably where someone came up with the thought that the condition of children in New Mexico has improved.
Right, exactly. So that is an indicator, theoretically, that something went in the right direction in New Mexico. And obviously, for the others, then it is an indicator that things have not gone as well or not going as well. And the bigger categories, the broader categories, economic well-being, we dropped from 48 to 49. Education, we were 50th in 24, now we're 50th again. More to come on that. Health, 44th to 46th. And family, 49th to 50th. So one of the things that we need to be honest with in New Mexico is that we're not another government program away from moving New Mexico in the right direction. This is not about spending more money. We've been doing that. It is not working. It is not about another program, pre-K, this, that, or the other. This is about fundamentally we need to rethink the way New Mexico works. And I firmly believe that the economy and economic diversification, returning money to the people, creating a broader growth in the economy, creating school choice, those are some of the ways that we can actually move the needle, not what we've been doing for really the past 100 years, but certainly under this governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham, we have been pumping more money, thanks to the oil and gas boom, into various government programs, and it's just not getting the job done.
Now, Paul, you'll be surprised to hear this from me. Agree in those areas that you mentioned that, mm-hmm. that need to see improvement. I just always want to try to bring it back. Jesus in the home is going to make a difference in our community and then have an impact, I would say, Paul, I almost hate to call it trickle down, but into all those areas that you mentioned, if we treat things like we've been given, the resources we've been given and the things that have been put under our stewardship, the way that we're instructed to in Scripture, I am confident that we would see an improvement in all of these numbers.
I completely agree. And to their credit, the NEKC Foundation mentions something that you will never hear from the child poverty advocates, especially those on the left. One of their sub-variables is children and single-parent families. And while obviously there are ways that you can wind up in a single-parent family.
Which, by the way, the church equals those outside the church in that situation. So it's something we can all be working on.
Sure. Yeah. And, obviously there are different ways that can happen. But generally speaking, it's divorce or unwed childbirth. And that's an area that is tracked. Unfortunately, in the last index, we went up a percentage. We went from 44% to 45% in New Mexico. So it's a credible report. Now, get this. NEKC does the research, but New Mexico Voices for Children, a very left-wing organization, it just blindly, in my opinion, supports whatever the Democrats are doing, at least the progressives. They were quoted in the Albuquerque Journal. There's an article in today's paper, and this is from Gabriel Ubaez, the executive director of Voices for Children, and this is in the newspaper. She said, other states have vastly different circumstances than New Mexico. Whether it's their population, their racial and ethnic makeup, their just general structure. We can't compare New Mexico to other states. We like to look at comparing New Mexico to itself. Now, that is the ultimate cop-out. First and foremost, plenty of other states have what you would call racial and demographic issues, and I would cite Mississippi. We've talked extensively about them. I looked it up. You want to know what Mississippi ranks in education?
38th.
16.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Mississippi is moving.
They have been busy.
Yeah, moving the ball forward. Now, Mississippi has all of New Mexico's issues and more.
So where were they in, how long ago?
Now, that I don't have offhand, but they were down in the kind of 50th, 49th range.
No, we've talked about that on the show. Yeah, that's a wow.
Yeah.
Someone hopefully in New Mexico is taking notes.
There are people who are talking about this, including the Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce has had recent speakers come in from Mississippi to talk about it. There's even some discussion in the legislature, but they're not willing to go full Mississippi for a variety of reasons. And I could get into those exact reforms, but we've written extensively about it at heirsofenchantment.com. So I would encourage folks to go there and find out. Just put Mississippi in the search box. We've written quite a bit about it. So New Mexico has advantages. You know, a lot of people in New Mexico just say, oh, poor us. We can't do anything. We don't have the resources, the this, the that. Well, I've been to Mississippi. I'm sure it's a lovely place. I would not want to be there in June, July, and August. And
American Idol winner just came out of, Meridian, Mississippi.
There you go. 90% humidity, though. They don't have oil and gas like New Mexico does. We're the second biggest producing state in the country, and our budgets have been growing at a rapid pace in recent years. There are plenty of things that we have advantages in, and it just really bugs me because I would call that a pretty racist statement. You know, we can't succeed because of our racial and ethnic makeup. That is from the left-wing Voices for Children. I find that to be offensive and something that is just inaccurate because Mississippi's got plenty of students of different minority groups, and they are showing the nation how it's done. Now, on that education front, the kicker is that if you go to the education area, check out some of these data points. And I know, A, it's depressing, and I know, B, there's a lot of numbers flying at you. But fourth graders not proficient in reading. New Mexico, from the last study to this one, went from 76% to 80%. So 80% of fourth graders are not proficient in reading. That is a crime. It is insane. It is horrible. All the things.
But they gave more money
per student. You would think we would just have all the reading
money
done.
Is not, yeah, you already said it. Money isn't the answer.
Eighth graders not proficient in math. This is directly from this report. 86%, up from 79% in the last report. Now, this is pre-COVID versus post-COVID. So they use actual data from 2019.
You know, I don't know if this is, you know, something that... And we're talking about our state leaders fixing these things. But, you know, I kind of wonder, it just occurred to me, I just wonder how much screens as opposed to books but every state's gone through that.
I could not agree more. Yes, families need to, you know, guide their kids, educate their kids. On the flip side, we're paying here in Albuquerque, $35,000 per student at APS. We need to get something for that money. Now, please, as a parent, if you're listening, read to your children. Make sure you stay on top of their studies. Make them do homework when they have it. All those kinds of things. Attending school.
Paul,
that
$35,000, and we brought this up before, but I want to bring it up again. Where does that rate nationwide? You may not have the exact number compared to other states per child.
Well, that was APS, and we don't have access to the same data at the state level. We probably could find the aggregate number for education spending K-12 in New Mexico and find the number of students. It is much easier to do that at the district level. The nationwide reporting doesn't necessarily find that same number, but we take the aggregate of APS's budget, divide it by the number of students, and that is what they spend.
Other places are you know, goes without saying, other places are spending much less per student.
Absolutely.
And getting much better results.
Correct. Yes. So, I mean, there's more to be said, but I think we've hit people with enough there. Go to heirsofenchantment.com. Go to the links we have there to the Kids Count Report. Understand that this is a critical issue for our state because we're talking about not just kids, but everything that impacts our state and its future is driven by these results. We're in a nationwide decline in the number of kids that we have. And New Mexico is not serving the kids that we have. And yes, parents, family members, guardians, grandparents, et cetera, all need to participate and do the best they can. But we are paying a lot of money for those schools, and they could be doing a much better job than they are. So, and it's not just the schools. It's the poverty and the economy and the fact that we have money flowing out of our ears from the oil and gas industry, and we're not returning it to the families. We're just pumping it into more government programs, which clearly have not gotten the job done.
All right. Well, if you just tuned in, we're spending the full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org. It is errorsofenchantment.com and tippingpointnm.com, Paul?
Tippingpointnm.com, yes.
For the podcast to follow. You know, you get a lot of these topics you hear on this show, but Paul and his co-host cover a lot of issues there. This one we just covered, if you go to errorsofenchantment.com, probably do a search for kids count. You'll find the full article, and there's more to come. We're going to take a break, come back after this on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect.
Hey, on KLYT.fm, you go find all kinds of stuff there throughout the website, but on the homepage particularly, we regularly try to update that with information pertinent to what you're going to want to know. And in the Action Center specifically, I want to call attention to the Day of the Christian Martyr that's coming up Sunday, June 29th. Actually had a chance to catch up with Todd from Voice of the Martyrs, and we're going to play that interview for you on next week's ABQ Connect. But June 29th, there'll be a special time when Christians remember those who have given their lives for the advancement of the gospel. And this month, we hope you'll spend some time and be inspired by their faithful witness, committing to share Christ boldly in your own community. There's a 2-minute video we put on our homepage at klyt.fm. You can go check that out and download the toolkit for the Day of the Christian Martyr. It's from persecution.com/martyr. It includes the Day of the Christian Martyr video, questions for discussion, so you can use it in your Bible study, or it even has church bulletin inserts to educate people in your church about what's going on, social media graphics you could use, prayer slides, whether to use those as for maybe even for your social media posts, or if you're going to have more in-depth coverage at your church, even a sermon outline they make available. If a pastor wants to cover this Day of the Christian Martyr in a weekend service or a midweek service, a conversation guide as well, talking with children about persecuted Christians. Day of the Christian Martyr, it's coming up Sunday, June 29th. Look for that 2-minute video at klyt.fm. The full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. And Paul, it's always good to go on the website at errorsofenchantment.com and catch up on these posts. The next one, it looks like you're communicating to us that something has upset our governor.
Yes, that would be an accurate statement. Specifically, what has upset our governor is that the Congress of the United States, in conjunction with President Trump, has overturned the California exemption from federal regulations that was going to allow California to eliminate the internal combustion engine, or at least try, by 2035, and allow New Mexico to go 82% electric vehicles, 43% by this year, 82% phased in over the span of next 7 years or so. So
if it's 82 in 7 years, sounds like they were headed for the same goal of 10 years to be at 100%.
Well, that would have been where they stopped, and that's apparently legal under the previous mandate that was in existence. Again, the exemption that California had dated back a long time, but as with any government policy, originally we got a really serious smog problem and people knew about it and people wanted it to be addressed in Southern California and Los Angeles, and you would have that driven by the lack of catalytic converters on cars and really inefficient motors and lead in the gasoline and all those kinds of things. So you eliminated most of that. Well, did they say, all right, we've succeeded. Good job, everybody. We're going to eliminate this thing. No, they expanded it dramatically. And over time, other states like New Mexico were able to participate. They started to say, well, we're going to mandate electric vehicles. And that's how New Mexico was theoretically going to force electric vehicles on people. So all of that led to, after Trump's election, the elimination of California's mandate through Congress. And 35 members of the Democratic Party joined the Republicans in the House, including Gabe Vasquez from right here in New Mexico. So kudos to Representative Vasquez. And then there was one Democrat out of Michigan, Alyssa Slotkin, who also voted with the Republicans to overturn the mandate or the exemption at the Senate level. So Trump signed it, and thankfully, New Mexicans will no longer be forced to buy EVs. The governor has signed up for a new coalition of the blue states that were supporting this to begin with. It's the Clean and Affordable Car Coalition. They don't have any real power. In fact, I was kind of, you know, I like to game theory these things out and see where are we heading in the years ahead. And yeah, obviously there's no, go ahead.
Well, I have a thought on, you know, on seeing, realizing that, wait a minute, we don't want this. Okay.
Right.
Here's history of we don't want this. Paul, where are a majority of the toll roads in the United States?
Mostly in the East Coast.
Okay.
Area.
So what happened was they'd set up these toll roads, and they would say, we're only going to have the toll on there for a certain amount of time, and then we'll take it off once, you know, essentially it's paid for. And then we'll just do regular maintenance on the roads. But what happened was, as you and I and everyone else listening knows, if you head back east, even into, you know, I mean, Oklahoma, and now north of us in Denver, when I think west, I think, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge or the Bay Bridge, you know, big bridges where you got to pay these tolls. And we were told that this is what happened eventually, that they would come off. And I was thinking, I was chuckling as you were going through talking about how they, you know, there was a time where they said, well, you know, we'll do the catalytic converters, we'll get the lead out of gasoline, the things. And you saw the improvement. And in spite of that, they wanted more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the toll roads are a good look at history and how, as you went west, people and built roads more going west, people said, no, we're not falling for it. You have to hope in a situation like this with the mandates, you know, that the longer we go on, that it'll become clear that this isn't something that's good.
Right. Well,
common sense.
Relating to the regulation itself and the way things could happen, you know, obviously Republicans like to think that they've got some governing majority for the next several decades. But, you know, hypothetically, as soon as the end of Trump's term, we could see a Democrat in the White House. We could even see Democrats in the Congress. And what would they do relating to these electric vehicles? Well, theoretically, they could increase the efficiency mandates in ways that make it impossible to drive a gas-powered vehicle. Something along those lines, they would do it. But it wouldn't be the same way we've had it with the California kind of calling the shots for the rest of the country. And of course, I do think our governor, at least in the next 30-day session, which will be her last session, will probably want to throw even more EV subsidies at people through tax credits for EVs, tax credits for the charging stations, et cetera. So it is a win. It is unequivocal win for motorists, for automotive freedom, for economic freedom, thanks to Republicans in the Trump administration and those crossover Democrats who voted in that direction. So,
well, good news. If we end up getting to that direction, And like you said, people get in office that, you know, return to this and getting us out of the cars that we're driving with the cost of getting into the vehicles they want us to buy. They're going to have to put a restroom in the back of the vehicle, which would make it an abode that you could get a mortgage on and more afford the monthly payment. It's unbelievable what they think people are going to be able to spend to do what they want. Listen, Paul Gessing is our guest for the full hour with the Rio Grande Foundation. Go to riogrande.org to find out more about the organization. Go to errorsofenchantment.com to find many of these stories that we're talking about. You can also listen to Paul. He puts out a podcast regularly on tippingpointnm.com. You can find that, of course, where you get your podcast RSS feeds or what have you. Paul, any teas for Tipping Point New Mexico, what people may find archived recently or what you have ahead?
Well, our most recent conversation was with Sarah Smith, an activist in Las Cruces, talking about some of the issues going on in that town. I recently talked to Doug Peterson, who is a major property owner, commercial real estate property owner here in Albuquerque, talking about some moves afoot downtown, as well as property tax increases and overall public safety issues in our city and state. So definitely check out Tipping Point New Mexico, and you can also find it through your favorite podcasting and audio software on your phone.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back with more with Paul right after this on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect.
Hey, a full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Go to riograndefoundation.org. Paul, how's your memory for, recalling things?
Generally pretty good.
Okay. Well, there is a class coming that folks, you might, I don't know if you'd be interested or not, but Calvary Church Mega Memory is happening July 11th, starting at 6:30. And listen, if you want to learn how to remember anything forever, okay. Calvary Church is the place that's happening. And listen, it's happening at Calvary, but it's open to the community. It's called Mega Memory, an exciting and practical class that will teach you how to learn, retain, and recall information with confidence. It's a four-week class open to middle school students and older. And actually, I noticed when I went to the website to get the details, younger students can go, but they need to be there with parents. The details are on the website at calvarynm.church. Nothing wrong with further education, right?
Absolutely not.
Paul and I are going through some of the blogs that he's posted at errorsofenchantment.com. Capital outlay is the next topic for probably the next couple stories and posts that we're going to be talking about. Paul, tell us about the broken capital outlay process that you discussed with KOAT recently.
Well, we've discussed it at some length over the past several years, because it is such a problem in a state that has a deteriorating road system and infrastructure. And you don't need to go very far to look at what is deteriorating. I drive on the roads every single day, and there's bridges that are in serious need of repair. In the meantime, we're sitting on just under $6 billion in unspent capital outlay funds. And I talked about that with KOAT recently. But as if to just give us a story to talk about that really relates to this issue, the Route 66 Visitor's Center, I'll give him credit. Larry Barker from Channel 13 did a fantastic job with his story. Again, you can find it at errorsofenchantment.com. I embedded it there. It was aired recently on Channel 13, but I wanted to make sure that we highlighted it here and discussed it, because sometimes people don't always catch those local news stories. This one's certainly worth catching. And, I talk about, well, one of the fundamental problems. They spent $13 million on this Route 66 Visitor Center. It's now, got a tap.
Where is it over on, like, I'm near Nine Mile Hill or something?
It's off of, I've never been by it, but it is off of what you'd call old Route 66 or Central. And it's the, that area where you're kind of theoretically coming into town. And I think the fact that it's kind of off the beaten path, that they actually mentioned that in the story is one of the problems. But it's, again, $13 million of our tax money. It's got a tap room. It's got speaker systems and a whole audio visual setup. It's got an area for public speaking. It's got just a ton of money poured into it. A lot of that capital outlay dollars. Other money from the city and the county, Bernalillo County, and all of these politicians getting behind this idea and thinking that it was going to be some amazing feature for the city. And it's not even open now. Everything's ready to go. It's sitting there completed with a lot of the equipment just waiting to be turned in. They talk about a big printer. I forget, like a massive printer that could print probably the size of this table, you know, a 5 foot long printer that has never been plugged in. And it's just, unfortunately, the way government works. They try to come up with a need for something. Usually here, especially in recent memory, there's plenty of money, thanks in part to the oil and gas industry. But in general, there's money laying around all over the place that could be used to better our citizens' lives and do important things like keeping the roads in good shape and saving people from having to drive in dangerous conditions. But instead, we put this boondoggle out on the West Mesa. And I would say that some of the notable people who messed up here would be the mayor with Stephen Michael Quezada from the county commission and city council, especially her name escapes me right now, but the South Valley lady who is on city council. And I'll get that in a second. But.
Okay. Well, we do want to remind you, if you want to look at the stories in depth, and actually the two that Paul has mentioned here when it comes to coverage of the capital outlay for New Mexico, and its brokenness. You'll find it at errorsofenchantment.com. Do a search for, you know, capital outlay, obviously, or Route 66 Center. You'll find both of those stories.
And that's Clarissa Pena. She was one of the leading advocates, along with now-departed Stephen Michael Quezada. So very unfortunate. It's closed right now. We'll see if they ever get this thing open and how much more money that'll take out of our pockets to do that.
All right, let's press on. This actually, another story. There's a couple things we're going to talk about today that we covered on Tuesday, but I love to get the different perspectives and information. When Carla Sontag was here a couple days ago, we talked about the heat advisory, but you wrote a blog post about it. What did you have to share there, Paul?
Yeah, well, this
I should say the heat rule not the,
was yeah. proposed by the New Mexico Environment Department. Signatures or comments are currently being accepted. It was originally supposed to end on May 30th, but thanks to the overwhelming number of comments, it has been extended to July 17th. You can go to heirsofenchantment.com and find our posting about that and how to comment. Why is this so problematic? Well, if the heat index hits 80 degrees, which it undoubtedly will today and kind of does right now at a pretty regular basis, workers could be forced to work just 20 minutes out of every hour and take a 40-minute break.
That's a heat index too, right? That they talk
about. Right.
It's not the your thermometer could say 77 and they'll be applying this at times when the heat index is above 80, if it were to pass. Paul, I do want to call attention to something you said in the blog post that was new to me in the discussions I've had with other people about it, is, you know, because the thing is like, come on, You know, hundreds of years, people have been working outside, and common sense, you know, dictates, hey, it's time for a break and to load up on some water and SPF and hats and, you know, appropriate coverings and what have you, if you're going to be working in conditions like that. And we, you know, it's not only outside. Realize this would impact probably restaurant kitchens.
Yep.
Keep that in mind when you think, okay, so when it gets hot enough in the restaurant, how long is it going to take to get your meal? But what I'm getting at, Paul, you mentioned its connection to those advancing the climate change agenda, which was new to me.
Yeah, so this regulation, it is supported by an odd coalition of folks. And we, as we like to do at the Rio Grande Foundation, took a closer look at who is pushing it. Because you would think, well, who is most likely to want to deal, you know, in some way with the heat issue? Probably guys working on asphalt laying roads in July and August in what is well above 80 degree temperatures. Well, no, that's not who is behind this. And you can find out more about this effort at healthyclimatenm.org. That's the coalition effort behind this thing. The leading groups are Conservation Voters New Mexico, a pretty radical environmental group, and teachers unions. First, you look at it and you say, what is the motivation of those two types of groups? Conservation Voters New Mexico. Well, their messaging is, gosh darn it, the climate is getting hotter. Therefore, we need this heat roll. I think that is a couple of leaps in terms of logic and the way you would address that through a policy measure. But it does give them an opportunity to kind of message and say, oh, planet's getting hotter. We need a heat rule. And then the other one, these unions for the teachers, it's the only thing you'd even think about is sometimes APS has trouble getting the HVAC system set up by the time the kids hit school in early August. And those schools can be very hot. But I also think this is just another way for them to try to keep themselves relevant and out there perceived as doing something. Those are the two main groups pushing this. There are events. Healthy Climate New Mexico has scheduled some events across the state, including right here in Albuquerque. And we're going to be checking those out to see what they're really telling people about this. I've talked to some folks in Gallup, which was originally listed as a city sponsoring a upcoming event, and they, not surprisingly, didn't know what was going on and quickly remove themselves from being involved in the sponsorship. So I'm going to be talking to some city leaders here in Albuquerque to see if we can get a similar question asked of the group pushing this particular regulation.
Full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. If you haven't been there yet, go to riograndefoundation.org.
Rio Grande Foundation.
I'm sorry, excuse me.
Okay.
Thanks, Paul. RioGrandeFoundation.org, as well as errorsofenchantment.com. And as we mentioned earlier, the podcast, tippingpointnm.com. You'll find information about the podcast there, and of course, find it wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more. The mayoral election is coming up. By the way, in case you didn't know, there's an election November 5th. I encourage you to be registered to vote, and on November 1st or 5th, or if they're doing early voting, partake in that, but please do vote. We'll get back with more after this on ABQ Connect.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect.
Well, as I mentioned, going into the break, November 5th will be an election, not only a mayoral election, but city positions and other things will be on the ballot. But Paul, the Rio Grande Foundation, already busy getting surveys to the mayoral candidates.
Yeah, absolutely. We are very engaged with this particular election here in the city of Albuquerque, and I realize that it's considered an off-year election that, you know, often doesn't get as much attention as it should, but we are in the midst of a mayoral race as well as several city council races across the city of Albuquerque. I think it's a very important opportunity for people to change the trajectory of the city in a more positive direction. Of course, Tim Keller is working for a third term, and you have numerous candidates running against him. We have a runoff election, I would say, not just potentially, but more than likely, given the quantity of candidates that would then potentially happen. But obviously, it's very critical that people get out and vote in November. And one of the things that we're hoping to do to spur them on and inform them is we're quizzing the mayoral candidates and council candidates on various issues of importance economically here in the city of Albuquerque. I can read the whole thing relatively quickly. Will you pledge to oppose any and all city tax increases while you're in office? Yes or no? Would you support amending the city charter to require a referendum before adopting future tax increases? I think both of those are critical. If you are going to increase taxes, which we certainly don't think is necessary, you should have to go to a vote of the people. Will you work to eliminate the city of Albuquerque's taxpayer-funded free bus program, which has encouraged criminal behavior on city buses and at bus stations? Should the city of Albuquerque remain immigrant-friendly and prohibit law enforcement from enforcing certain federal immigration laws? How would you increase the supply of housing in the city of Albuquerque? In a sense or two, describe how to best address Albuquerque's homeless situation. What are your priorities for reducing crime? Should the city raise its minimum wage? If so, what should the rate be? Should the city repeal its project labor agreement law, which raises the cost of city-funded construction projects? And should the city of Albuquerque ban plastic bags? So those are the 10 questions. We try to make it simple, straightforward, but really focused on, I think, the biggest issues facing our city at this time.
And, Paul, when the results come in, they'll find them at riograndefoundation.org?
Correct. Heirs of enchantment.com, both.
I was going to say any ETA, but you're waiting on candidates.
Yeah, we're talking to candidates, encouraging them, and we just sent it out less than a week ago. I expect that we'll start to have results soon, but you just got to check back to heirsofenchantment.com and riograndefoundation.org very regularly.
Yeah. And I don't want to make a commitment because we may forget, but I'd love to cover some of that.
I'll certainly share the results with you in a future interview.
Yeah. All right. So that, again, you'll find the blog that Paul put up for that at heirsofenchantment.com, but watch for the results at riograndefoundation.org. All right, Paul. I if there's one thing I maybe would have never guessed we'd be talking about on this show was okra in New Mexico.
Yeah. Well, you and me both. And this one kind of started as a silly story that turned into a little more serious story. A few weeks ago, as they are wont to do, the New Mexico Economic Development Department sent out a email highlighting some recent recipients of grants from the state of New Mexico. And these are agriculturally oriented grants. And the very first one was for Ashokra Farm in Albuquerque, a 1.5-acre vegetable farm specializing in what they call culturally significant okra. And I thought, what in the heck are they talking about? What is the cultural significance of okra, especially here in New Mexico?
Our state Doge department didn't find this one.
No. Well, I you could argue whether we in the Rio Grande Foundation may be the closest thing we have to a Doge department, but that's a discussion for a different time. Well, then, I was just looking this thing up, and I had posted something about it. I said, what is culturally significant okra? And was just kind of making fun of it. Well, Then somebody told me, hey, you should check out their Facebook page because this farm, this group of people is pretty far out there. And one of the first things I saw was on their Ashokra Farm Facebook page that it was a queer and people of color farm. And they had an article about them in the UK's Guardian talking about how this farm, you know, was protecting people who are there from the threats of homophobia, transphobia, racism, and sexism. I'm not sure how a farm does that, but that's their thing. And then below that, I was looking at another post that they had made on their Facebook page, and they had a post about supporting a free Palestine and into genocide, and that they were boycotting certain agriculture companies that are based in Israel and that they claim are helping to fund the Israeli Defense Force. This is obviously a incredibly left-wing group of people here, and they're receiving $25,000 of our tax money for whatever purposes they have with their culturally significant okra and other left-wing causes.
And if you want to find out again more about that, then we'd encourage you to go to the website at errorsofenchantment.com.
Yep.
And, you know, we started off the hour talking about, Paul, an event coming up in just a little bit. And at riograndefoundation.org, you can actually register to be at this luncheon at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center in Albuquerque, which, by the way, I've been there. It's been a while, but every time I've been there, it's good food.
Yeah.
It's happening Wednesday, June 18th at noon. Now the doors are going to open at 11:45, and they're going to start promptly. You know, these luncheons, folks come for, and Rio Grande Foundation and those, you know, putting on the lunch are respecting people's time here to get them back to work for those that are going back to work on that Wednesday, June 18th. So if you're planning on going, get, you know, register in advance, get there and plenty of time to get in and get sat and get ready for the speaker, Fraser Institute's Matthew D. Mitchell. I, at the beginning of the show, I walked through some of his resume. Paul, anything, though, anything in addition to that you wanted to say about
Well, he's actually from New Mexico and is lives in Angel Fire. He was once upon a time involved with the Rio Grande Foundation. He works at this Canadian think tank, but they do reports, great studies about economic freedom. And broadly, economic freedom is just the ability that you have to control your own money. And that Okra report, you know, $25,000, obviously not a huge deal, but what could you do with $25,000? What could another business that isn't such a politically motivated hack job do with $25,000? Now, I would think that we should be cutting taxes and making New Mexico more business friendly. The government prefers to keep that money and to hand it out to their friends and allies. And we really need New Mexicans to be educated and focused on expanding economic freedom, because it's the single best way that we can improve our lives in New Mexico. We can improve our outcomes. We can improve upon our poverty situation and our educational attainment and all those different things. So Matt is really talking about on June 18th at lunch, riograndefoundation.org/events. You can find out and sign up there, and lunch is included. Very reasonable prices on that particular event. So that's what it's all about.
All right. And, of course, we'll get Paul back here in just about a month to update us on some of the stuff we covered today. There'll be follow-up, too. So we encourage you to join, you know, to listen daily to ABQ Connect. You don't want to miss Paul's next visit here, in just about a month. And you can watch for this archive. It should be up no later than Monday. But you can find it at abqconnect.online. Paul, always appreciate your time, the work that you do, along with the rest of the folks involved with the Rio Grande Foundation, with Errors of Enchantment, and Tipping Point, New Mexico. Thanks so much for all you do.
Thank you, Steve. Take care.
All right. And thank you for listening to ABQ Connect.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.